There we go. Got it. Good evening, guys. We'll just give it a few seconds to catch up, as per usual. Here we go. We are live. Good evening. Welcome to Live and Undrugged Series 4, Episode 2. Tonight I'm speaking with Jill Schultz, who is an author, and is going to tell us something about shame. So that's something that we all suffer and we all feel as addicts. I feel that we feel it very, very deeply. So I'll be really interested in hearing this. Thanks for coming on, Jill.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Brilliant. So let's go. Just let's go back
Get
to the
into
start.
it.
Listen, yeah, get into it.
Dive in. Okay. So, I was talking to Jack before, and I said, I'd like to do a little public service announcement because what I am going to say is something that's not being talked about. It's taboo. And I just need to know that your listeners are safe and protected. And so I do have resources on my website. My website is jilleschultz.com, just how my name is appearing on the screen without the period, jilleschultz.com. And there is a resource section there for you to find if you need to talk to somebody or if you feel like this is triggering for you, please find somebody to talk to because it's really important to me that you're safe. But I'm super grateful for the Me Too movement because I feel like those women who came forth were so brave to do so. And now it's given us a space where we can talk about sexual trauma a little bit easier than we were able to, even 5 years ago. And but where my story goes deeper is, and I was molested when I was around 3 or 4 years old. And where my story goes deeper is that because of what somebody taught me to do, I was the little girl who innocently and curiously experimented with other children when I was only a child myself. And the debilitating shame that I lived with for 41 years, thinking that I was the only done anything like that. The only little girl, the only child who had ever done anything like that was just overwhelming. And so the reason that I'm sharing my message now, number one, is because God told me this is what I get to do now. And number two is I just really want people to know that they're not alone. I want to collapse time because if somebody had been having these conversations 20, 30, 40 years ago, my life would have been completely different. And so this is your, if this is your story and you're being triggered by it, or you're just realizing that this happened to you, or you're having a memory, or you're like, okay, this is finally something that I get to deal with. I want you to know that you're not alone. You get to forgive yourself. You get to love yourself and you get to live a fucking magical life because on the other side of healing is beautiful. So thank you for letting me be here today, Jack, to share, my story. I just really want to help people to know that they get to have a magical life.
Thanks for coming on. Where did it lead you? You said that you experimented with other kids and that, and then where did that lead you?
So all of that was going on between the ages of 7 and 12 for me. And I got caught in the closet with another child and was told by an adult, little kids go to hell who do that. And so, there's shame and then there's toxic shame. That was the day that I took toxic shame on into everything that I am. All my entire being. And, there were certain areas of my life that it affected me. And one was I had an eating disorder until I was 41 years old. I was bulimic until I was 41. I wasn't connecting with men. I also really had imposter syndrome in my businesses and in my life. And so those were the three ways that shame really showed up for me in because of what happened. And self-love too. Like I didn't lo I'm 56 years old now. I didn't love myself until I was 51 years old. I just lived in this with this constant shame cloud over my head. And so being able to do to get involved in therapy and get involved in programs where I was able to do healing work and really get to the place where I was able to let all of that go. Because could you imagine? And some of you are probably saying, yes, I can imagine because this is my story. But at the age of 12 years old, I thought I was a monster. I thought I was a pedophile, I thought I was an adult acting out when I was really just a child, experimenting because of what somebody else had taught me to do.
I get that. I get that. That must have been hard.
I mean, I would wake up every day and have this oppressive shame cloud over my head. And I would go to sleep at night, and it was constantly following me around. It was constantly this nagging feeling of, you don't deserve anything. You don't deserve to be happy. You don't deserve to have joy in your life. You don't deserve to have love in your life. You don't deserve to love yourself. You don't deserve success. It was just this constant oppressive pushing down on my soul, for 41 years. So, like I said, I'm really here talking about this because I want people to know that if this is your story, number one, you get to talk about it because that was one of the things that was so hard for me. I thought, how can I go talk to somebody and tell them, say out loud the things that I had done because I thought of myself as a monster. And I remember the first time that I decided to go to therapy, I had this awful pit in my stomach. And I'm like, how am I going to say these things out loud? And I want your people to know, your audience to know, that whatever story you have made up about what somebody's going to think of you if you share your shame, and it doesn't have to be around sexual trauma. Everybody has a secret, right? Everybody has a secret. And I have a worksheet on my website if you want to really try and hone in and nail down what it is that you're ashamed of. If you're kind of like, I don't know what my shame is, it's called Uncover Your Shame, and you can find it on my website at jillyschultz.com. But one question, there's several questions on there that are really, really good. But one question on there is, what is one thing only you and God know? And so when I finally got to the place that I knew that I got to talk about it, and I actually said the words out loud, and this is what I want your people to hear and to understand, the level of compassion and kindness and understanding and love that came from the person that I shared with blew me away. I had no idea that that was going to be how that person was going to react. I thought they were going to like be, get out of my office, you're a terrible person. But there was so much love and understanding and compassion. And every time that I tell my story, I'm amazed at how people react because for so long, I told myself this big lie that it was going to be completely opposite than what the reality of what it was. So.
I don't think that you can really be blamed as a child for doing what you were taught to do, because you don't know any better. Adults, that's a different thing. But so I don't think there's any blame there. But I guess that there are people out there that there is still stigma around that. But for me, I was trafficked as a kid. I didn't know it was trafficking until I was an adult, really, up until a few years ago when I wrote a book about
You were
it.
trafficked or you were trafficking?
No, I was trafficked.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't. Okay.
I was in the special school system, because there was no such thing as dyslexia when I was a, well, there was, but it was just you were put down to naughty and lazy and a bit stupid. So I was put into that system. I had a messed up head anyway. I didn't know who I was. I had this existential crisis at 8. And people took advantage of that. And I was abused for years. And I couldn't talk about it. I only started really talking about it. I started making films, short films, masking it as fiction. And then when I wrote the book, working with escapees of trafficking, I realized what it was. I thought it was plain abuse. But I get the guilt and shame. It was there. It's always been there. It still tries to pop its head up every now and again. It's not the easiest thing to live with. Talking about it helps. This is why I started this whole thing, to give a voice to the marginalized, and the abused, and the survivors are pretty much marginalized, and it's those that need the voices. So yeah, and anything that you can do to help people manage their guilt and their shame, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I think it's important to really, because you said something here, there's one thing when it's an adult that's abusing a child, but when it's children that are just really replicating what somebody else taught them to do is a completely different story. I remember I've had three therapists in my span of healing. I've done very intensive programs, like I don't know if you know Landmark Education. I did this program called Heartcore Leadership. These are really transformational courses that show when you're pointing your finger at somebody else, you have three pointing back at yourself. So it's really about taking responsibility and not taking responsibility for what somebody did to you, but taking responsibility for where you are right now. Like we get to choose every single day what our life can look like. Like you today, whoever you are out there listening, you can say, you don't own me anymore. I'm not going to live like this. I'm not going to live in shame anymore. I get to choose today to create a new life for myself. And while I was going to therapy, the second therapist that I had, in fact, he's in my book, he's written a chapter in the book about what to do, how to talk to your children around, boundaries and things like that, so your children are not targeted, or what to do if your child has been abused. But I remember I was 41 years old when I started seeing him, and I started seeing him because of my bulimia. I'm like, you're 41 years old. You got to fucking get your shit together. You're going to kill yourself if you don't stop binging and purging. And so I went back to therapy, and for the first time, I had this tiny little glimpse of relief around the story that I'd been telling myself for 41 years. And he said to me, he goes, how old were you when this was happening? And I said, 7 to 12. He goes, who do you know that's 12 years old? And I thought of my niece. And he said, do you think she reasons like an adult? Do you think she has the capability of acting like an adult? Do you think her mind functions like an adult? No, she functions like a 12-year-old child. And it was the first time that I thought, oh my God, I was a little kid. I was just a little kid. And so I was able to really at that point start healing and forgiving myself, forgiving that little girl, because that's what I was. I was a little girl. So I just wanted to make sure that people know that if you were a child when this stuff was happening, like you get to give yourself a break. And I love that you said you get to talk about it, because that talking about it helps. Like shame can't live in the light. So the more that you talk about it, and it's the reason today that I'm able to have this conversation without completely breaking down. Because, when I first started doing the deep healing around this, I all day long I'd cry and cry and cry and cry because there was so much inside of me that was still so ashamed. But because I've said it out loud, it doesn't have power over me anymore.
That's exactly the thing, isn't it? Shame, it kind of rules us, takes us to places that in our heads, and in our spirits that we don't want to be, and manifests itself in different ways. I talk about these things as a man because there are not a lot of men out there that do speak about this sort of trauma and how they got through this sort of trauma. We need more men to do this. But yeah, guilt and shame. I mean, that took me to my deathbed, literally to my deathbed. And I had a complete and utter psychological breakdown. I was convinced that God had caused the end of the world because of what I'd done in my life. He'd just had enough. I call it my personal apocalypse. I wrote a book about it. And yeah. And whilst I was in hospital, I was facing that, all the guilt and the shame playing over and over and over and over and over again. And it was only through meeting with Christ for me, and then over the past 9 years, actually speaking about these things and speaking with elders at the church and with professionals about trauma, and realizing that my addiction, drugs weren't my problem, trauma was, drugs were my solution.
Yeah.
Then I was able to begin to work with my trauma, and it's not and guilt and shame and things like that, and forgiveness as well.
Yeah.
A lot of unforgiveness in my life for other people, and for myself as well. I couldn't forgive myself for some of the things that I did. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the unforgiveness and the shame? How do you even begin to start to deal with these things?
Yeah. Well, on the forgiveness scale, the other person, like whoever hurt me, I don't remember who it was that abused me. And I've been told by more than one therapist that it was probably somebody really close to me is the reason that I blocked it. And, but honestly, I forgave that person a long time ago for two reasons. Number one, hurt people, you know, and whether it was an adult or a child, you know, hurt people. Second of all, you can't move into healing and forgiveness for yourself until you've forgiven the other person. And you're not forgiving them for them, you're forgiving them for you so that you can let go of all of that and move forward. And I love that you were talking about, you know, we need to have more men talking about this. And when my book came about, I didn't want to write a book. God wanted a book. And so God always gets what God wants. God got a book. But the book unfolded beautifully. And as I continued to share my story with people, because once I surrendered to the fact that this is my purpose, I wanted to talk to everybody about it. You know, I wanted to set everybody free. And so I was sharing my story a lot in some of the coaching communities that I'm involved in. And there were three men who came forth and actually wrote chapters in my book. And I think that this is my opinion, so don't judge me for my opinion, but I really feel like, you know, as a woman going through this and being a woman who was sexually abused and then acted out is one thing, but I think for men that have been abused by a man and have acted out, there's a lot of confusion around sexuality for men. And I think, and I don't like, I really tread lightly, but there may be even a deeper sense of shame around this type of trauma for men because of the implications of how they feel about themselves and their sexuality, you know? So the beautiful men that have shared in my book, it's amazing to see, you know, what they've gone through and how they've gotten to the other side of healing for themselves. And for me, it was just really committing to doing the work. Like you've got to do the work. You're not one day going to wake up and go, oh, I'm fixed. You really have to dig in and find out what your triggers are, and look them in the eye and say, you don't own me anymore. And then you get to create a life from there. I believe that everything on our heart was given to us by God. Every want that you have was given to us by God. And you get to have those things. I truly believe that. I'm really into manifesting. And, I don't want a fishing boat. That's not on my vision board. I do want a yacht. That's on my vision board, So just know that every single thing on your heart, every little desire that you have, if you want it bad enough, you get to have it, but you get to do the work to get there, to feel like you deserve to have those things, And that's where shame comes in and holds us back and holds us down,
I get that. You spoke about imposter syndrome. That's one that's quite prevalent for a lot of people, I think, especially those that have come into survival, gone from victimhood to survivorship. And many people don't realize that there's a next step, which is to thrive. That's what we're doing now, but. I have people tell me all the time that I'm doing great and my journey is inspirational and this and that, and it's nice to get the praise, but there's always that voice in the back of your head going, you don't deserve this. Part of you deserves this. Look at what you've done in your life. Look at how you've held yourself in your life. Look at who you've hurt in your life, and all these things go around your head. And I guess partly I have, because I have a neurodivergent brain, it gets stuck on repeat at times, and the self-confidence and things like that. And that's when unforgiveness really kicks in. Then, well, you don't deserve this because, I forgave my niece's murderer. He was murdered himself by his cellmate, but I forgave him to help with my mental health. I was hit with a vast realization that you only really get with sudden pain, and I knew I had to forgive him, but it was easier forgiving him than forgiving myself for the life that I led, for the things that I put my children through, the things that I put my family through. That's a hard one.
So for me, now I'm at the place where I get to see my all of my trauma as a gift, because now I know I get to vulnerably share my story and help other people know that if your story is my story, you get to thrive. I love that you use that word. You get to thrive. Are you at the place now where you feel like you're able to see everything that you've gone through? Maybe not everything. Like there still may be some hitches in your giddy up. Like you still might have some hiccups, but are you able to see that because of what you're doing now, you get to be a gift for other people so that they see that they can too do the work and get to a place where life can be different?
I guess at first it was that I believed that if you've lived a certain life and you've done certain things in your life and you've lived a certain way and you've come through that, then it's your responsibility to educate the next generation, even the previous generation, and your generation. It's your God-given rights. It's a blessing and it's a curse, to educate. Is it? Yeah, it is a gift. And it is a blessing. Doesn't always feel like that.
No, you're right.
I know what I have done in my past, and there's still some guilt and shame there, some hurt. I grew up around 12-step programs, so Making things like gratitude lists and lists of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends, That's a difficult part because there are still some stuff that I guess there's some repressed stuff there, but there's still some stuff there in my life that does hold shame, hold stigma,
Yeah.
hurt for myself. That I'm willing to make myself as vulnerable as I need to be. At any given time, I will open up myself and I will be honest, sometimes brutally honest. But there are times when I just clam up and I can't. And all I can do is nod
Yeah.
because it's so painful. And I'm still learning to live with that. The therapy I get is at church and, fantastically, we have a lot of doctors in our church. We have therapists in our church. We have a lady that teaches general practitioners. And occasionally I go in with her and I get to share my story and teach general practitioners how to deal with addicts who are dealing with trauma.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's a blessing, but it's a one of mixed feelings, I guess.
I think doing podcasts too is a little bit of a more difficult medium to gauge because you don't know who's listening. Like, you don't know if right now the words that are coming out of your mouth literally change somebody's life. And I promise you that as many episodes as you've done, that there have been many people whose lives you have changed in an instant. But podcasts are hard because we don't know. We don't know who's listening. We have no idea the impact. But I'm grateful for you for being vulnerable and sharing your story because I know that you are impacting people.
Thank you for that. It does mean a lot. It does. I guess it's one of the reasons why I do it live as well. I'm quite
All
introverted
right,
at times,
yeah, that's right.
but doing it live opens up for you can't plan for what's happening live.
Yeah.
You can have a plan and you can have a backup plan and things like this, but doing it live makes it raw, and emotions can get raw at times. And I've sat, and I've I'm a 16 and a half, 17 stone bloke, 6 foot 1, and I've sat on here and I've cried with boxers and strong men and
Yeah.
18 stone muscular men, 20 stone muscular men, and I've sat here and I've cried with them. Sharing emotions, because I want to show men that
Yeah.
that's normal. And that's why I get people on who have a higher emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Because there's, unfortunately, it's not just men that dig at men and go, "What are you talking like that for?" Like it used to be back in the 70s and 80s and 90s when I was growing up. It's women as well.
Yeah.
Some women who see men as, "You should be strong, you should be this, you should be that." And it's teaching them that emotional intelligence is pivotal in moving forward. I've experienced a
Nothing.
lot grief in my life, and the one bit of wisdom that I've learned that's been passed around is that we never move on from grief and shame and guilt, but we do move forward. And I think that is the difference. We move forward with it, and that's how we are able to be more emotionally open and less confrontational, I guess.
Nothing sexier than a vulnerable man. A man that can be vulnerable and open and show emotion is beautiful.
I think that as a society we need more people to be open. I'm for instance, I'm part owner of a Facebook group, the largest former prisoners group on Facebook, HMP Catch Up, with just over 43,000 members. And there are some on there that really want to push forward rehabilitation and things, and dealing with the traumas that led them to that way of life. And there are some that really don't care, and there are some that just want to troll. And there will always be trolls. And I get that I make these, and there are some people that will sit there and they will judge them, and they will troll them. I've had a lot of it. I've had a lot of trolling. And I haven't given up yet. This is my fourth year doing this. I started with one of the country's top hostage negotiators, who's a good friend of mine. And he suggested doing this, and this has been sort of one of the biggest forces in my life to impact change. And if only one person is listening to it, then that's fantastic. I know different, I'm forever getting emails saying thank you for that, or comments on YouTube or Facebook. I have people that club together to make sure that my internet can be paid for, that never even met me like in person. They've only ever spoken to me on here, and they make sure that my my bill is paid so I can carry on doing this, because they know that the difference it is making.
Heck
It's
yeah.
not ju it's not just my voice. I get to use my voice, and that's great, but I created this to be an amplifier for other people's voices, soapbox for other people. Occasionally I speak about myself, but it's not just my platform. It's your platform. It's every other guest that's been before you, and every other guest that will come after you, because wisdom is there, through knowledge combined. You can't teach wisdom. You can teach knowledge, and then that knowledge can become wisdom. But it's a great bugbear of mine that there are so many people that judgmental or trolling, and you have to look at, don't you think, what's in their life?
Well, when you have, I wasn't quite sure where you were going with the term trolling, but you're talking about people giving you negative feedback and just having a, okay. Well, you're not making a difference unless you have people doing that. So you are making a huge difference if you're at that point where you have people who are feeding negativity into you. So you are doing the right things. And at that point, like you just have to get a thick skin. When you're talking about something that's triggering and taboo and all of those things, not everybody's going to be happy about it. And that's one thing that I know I really am going to have a thick skin because this is a topic that people are not going to be happy about me bringing forth. And so I think that's one of the reasons why God has slowed me down somewhat. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but when I first surrendered to all this, all I wanted to do was get on stages and speak my truth and help set people free and all of that. And God slowed me down. And there's been some things that have come up recently around my story, and that really has thrown me for a loop. You and I talked about how you took off some time. I did too, because I've had some situations come up where it has not been pleasant. And so when those types of things are happening, it's because you're making a difference. So you just have to be like, okay, here we are. and move on quickly from all of those emotions and all of the feelings that you're getting from that, you know? But that's because you're making a difference.
Yeah. Well, that's all I've ever wanted to do, you know. But like I say, one person, if one person watches it, then I'm happy. I'm not all, there are a lot of people out there. There are a lot of YouTubers and things like that. And it would be nice to have big numbers. I'm not going to lie, it would be nice to have, you know, the thousands. You know, I found myself, kind of making a begging video the other day to try to get more TikTok followers so I can go live and do more of this, have another avenue to be
Yeah.
able to open. Didn't go so well, but you know, these things happen. But sometimes, like you say, God slows you down. This has been a progressive journey from nearly 10 years now for me,
Yeah.
going from wanting to be in front of the camera and be an actor, to be behind the camera, to be a filmmaker. And I do both of those on occasion. You know, I've been nominated for awards and things on for film festivals, which is great. But I accidentally fell into journalism, hence the name, The Accidental Journalist. I've always wanted to be a writer since I, you know, I learned to read and write as an adult. I think the things that have stopped me as a writer and really pushing is the fact that I've had to go slow because of my mental health. I don't really get triggered. I was saying this last night. I don't really get triggered by things. I don't get triggered by watching people do drugs on television, apart from I get runny nose when I see somebody doing a line of cocaine on television. But apart from that, I don't really get triggered because words are my art. But I do sometimes let my emotions overtake because it's the right thing to do. As I say, I've cried many a tear on things like this, talking about some of these things that have been so personal, not just personal to me, but personal to my wife and my children, and you know, and I've kind of laid myself bare. And that opens you for attack, I guess. And
Yeah,
you
because
come to.
you're going to places that people aren't going. You're going to, you know, so you're opening up a whole new space to have a conversation, and sometimes people don't like that.
No.
But you know what? People like to see real too. Like, I love that you do this live, and you're like, you know, because you get to be every it's unexpected when you're doing live. Like, there's no, this is not scripted, you know. People want to see real shit. They don't want to see edited versions. They want to see people being real. You know, so that's what you're bringing to the table.
Yeah, and it's I guess it's what we have to do, and it's why I get people like you. So what can there's going to be a lot of people that do watch this that do experience guilt and shame. So how do they start their journey into dealing with this guilt and shame?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you have to admit that it happened. Like, you get to admit whatever you've done, you get to own it, you get to claim it, you get to finally say, yes, this happened. Because the more that you ignore it and avoid it, it's just going to keep coming at you. My favorite saying in the whole wide world is Neil Donald Walsh, life happens outside your comfort zone. That's not verbatim. Life happens outside your comfort zone. So all of that, like that nagging feeling that you have every single day, which is what I called my shame cloud, you get to look at that and you get to own it. That's number one. And we already talked about the forgiveness piece. You get to forgive whoever else has hurt you, because until you that do that, you are still in victim mode. And
yeah,
you get to stop being a victim, because life doesn't happen to you. It happens for you. And when you can realize that, then you can start taking steps forward. And find somebody that you trust to talk to. You know, I had to do a lot of journaling and a lot of, you know, just really looking at myself and talking to my, like, it's called mirror work, literally looking in the mirror and telling myself that I love you, you know, for everything that you are and everything that you've done. I love you. And now I walk by the mirror. I'm like, what's up? Hey, you're fucking amazing. You know? But those are like three of the things that I would say to start out with. I do have something on my website. It's 7 critical steps to healing from shame. So if people want to go through and look at that too, if that serves and is helpful for people, they're just the steps that I took in order for me to start, you know, healing from shame. But like, you get to give yourself grace no matter what you've done. Like, I know your, you know, some of your story and some of the things that are in your past, there are things that I can't even fathom. And I thought I had a taboo story, but stuff that, you know, some of your community has had happen in their life is, it's hard to wrap your mind around, you know, but you get to a place where you're like, okay, today's the day that I stop beating myself up over this. Today's the day that I get to change. Today's the day that I get to open my heart. Today's the day that I get to let Jesus in, you know? That's, to me, those are like really, really important things that you can start doing to move forward and find ways to heal. Like, if you have access to the internet, like, YouTube is such a huge opportunity for so many things. You can go on there and just type in, how can I heal my heart? Or how can I heal from sexual trauma? Or how can I heal from whatever it is? And something's going to pop up, you know? So use those resources too, to start to be able to forgive yourself and love yourself and move on.
Yeah, I guess that's it really, you know. It's about being easier on yourself. One thing from my journey is been about faith.
Yeah.
And I believe in the grace gospel. You know, I don't believe that we work at our lives, but I don't believe that you have to work to be forgiven. You know, by Christ, that was done on the cross.
Yeah.
And for me, that was a life changer. And I've spent many a Sunday morning, many a night in my church, lying on the floor, bawling my eyes out. No, you know, knowing that God's working. And you know, faith, I guess having faith in anything really is one step to getting better.
Yeah. Well, God's the only reason why we're here having this conversation. You know, this is the last thing that I would have ever chosen for myself. You know, and it's taken a lot of praying and a lot of surrender to get to the place where you and I are having this conversation today. So, number one, God has been 100% the reason. It's so funny too, because, you know, I was praying for my purpose for a very, very, very long time. And I've been very blessed. I have a couple of different businesses and I love what I do. But I always felt like there was this something missing in my soul. Like, I'm like, I don't, why am I here? Like, and so when God finally, like, I look back on my life now and all the things that I thought were hiccups were just God shifting me into a different space. Like, this fell through, or that didn't happen, or this didn't happen. It was just God saying, nope, this is where you're going, and kind of just shifting me. And the healing, the time that it took for my healing was also all part of that plan, you know, which is why surrender is such a beautiful thing. Because if you know that you're doing the right thing, if you know that you're in a place where you're being a good person and you're doing good things and you've surrendered and you've, you know, you're there, like you just get to let God take the wheel. Even if it's hard, especially if it's hard, like whatever is really hurting you right now, you get to say, okay, number one, thank you, because whatever you're doing to me right now is for good. And number two, you got this, you know?
Yeah, surrender to win has always been one of the sort of buzz phrases through my life. I used to see surrender as giving up and as a bad thing, but it's not.
No.
Once you realize that
Well, there's
actually,
giving up and surrender. Those are two
so
different things. Yeah.
exactly, but
Yeah.
once you realize that actually during war, when the threat to life, the threat to your battalion is greater than the possibility of winning, then you need to surrender and step back. Because sometimes that's what we need to do, step back and just retreat. I don't think surrender is always the best word, retreat. Sometimes we need to retreat. And so we can look back. Retrospect is a gift.
Yeah.
And to be able to look back on something and say, look, this is what I did wrong. Of course, you can get too deep into it and then you can start blaming yourself. I guess divergent people do, but yeah, it's about surrendering to win, and surviving for the next battle.
Yeah.
Because sometimes a battle is a battle, but the whole thing's a war. And there's going to be things that it's going to come, and that there's going to barrages and bombers and set us back and things like that. But I guess if we have the right mindset, the right tools to be able to deal with it in a way that is manageable
And healthy.
and healthy, because for so long our lives were unmanageable.
Yeah.
Whether it's addiction, trauma, guilt, shame, and forgiveness, it's all, it's all an unmanageability problem. So once we learn to manage it, then we can start moving forward.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's this stuff is not easy. This work is not easy. But you get to be brave and you get to be courageous and you get to step into it knowing that once you're on the other side, it can be beautiful. It can be so beautiful. But you got to do the work. And sometimes that is the hardest part, because it's hard AF. I've been in a lot of pain for a long time. A lot of pain, deep. Deep, deep pain. But I knew that I needed to decide that I was going to be stronger than that. And once again, I was going to look at it and say, you don't get to own me anymore. And I stepped into doing the work, but you got to do the work. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't sugarcoat. It's hard work. It really is. That's why I will never put down, whether I like people or not, if they're fighting through an addiction or trauma, I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. It's a fight for your life. It really is.
Yeah.
So, but it's something that we have to learn to deal with, because I don't want to go to any more funerals, let
Yeah.
alone my own.
Yeah.
on my own, because guilt, shame, and fear and unforgiveness turn in on itself is suicide, turned out on itself, that's homicide. So we have to learn to deal with it in some way, and some people never ever get through that. I remember, I went to, I think it was 8 funerals in 7 days of people lost to addiction, suicide.
It really hurts my heart when I see somebody that is just in so much pain and they can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like they are so deep in their pain. It's heartbreaking.
Is, but one thing I've come to realize is that you can find purpose in pain.
Yeah. If you're willing to do that, though,
If
but
you're willing to do that,
you have to be willing to do that.
and there is purpose out there for people like us, and a lot of people are finding it. A lot of people are learning to deal with it, and I know that there are some people that won't ever be able to watch this because the trauma is too strong and it will be too triggering.
Yeah.
I guess my wife included, but I think that we need to give more people a voice to
Yeah.
be able
Some,
to do
I
this.
keep I keep hearing this, and so I pay a lot of attention to my inner being right now. Like I listen to my intuition a lot because I feel like that gets to lead us to all the beautiful things that we want in our life. And you're talking about when you hold this in, it can be suicidal. And the other thing too is like what that does to our body, like cancer and all the awful things that all the ailments that we can have in our body can also be as a direct result of holding this shame inside of us. And I don't know why I felt to say that. It kept coming to me, say it, say it, say it. So I just decided to say it. Somebody needed to hear that right now. So, you get to start healing for your health too.
Yeah, I mean, I believe in listening to your heart, but I also believe in listening to God, and praying for
I see
things
the
like,
two as the same thing. When I say my inner being, to me, that is God.
I'm praying for discernment as well. For me, prayer is the biggest tool that I have. And some people think it's just talking into nothing. But atheist or not, everybody prays at some point.
Say that again.
Christian, atheist, whatever, everybody prays at some point. There is always some point in your life when you pray to a God of your own understanding or to something because things have got so difficult and so bad. I'm part of this movement called the School of Supernatural Life. It kind of came into fruition after our main leader, Grantley Watkins, visited a church called Bethel in Redding, California, and he came back with this need to set up the school about teaching people how to live a life with a God that is so supernaturally natural, but naturally supernatural, and praying for healing, praying for prophecy. I'm not talking about fortune telling. I'm not talking about clairvoyance, because people hear that and they think, oh, yeah, no, that's not of this. I'm talking about discernment for listening to God's voice and doing as He wants you to do. The The biggest prayer of my life has been the Serenity Prayer since I walked into my first AA meeting as a kid. But in its fuller form, I have it tattooed on my arm. I promised the guy if he got to 30 days sober, he could tattoo me. He'd got a machine many years ago, and I let him do it. And for those that don't know, it's God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. That's a big one. The courage to change the things I can, another big one, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one moment at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, and living as God would have me live, and as I would live by my own self. In Jesus' name. Now, that for me, reading it in that fuller form, that's like, whoa. Accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, accepting these things that have dragged me down to the pits of hell, literally, as a pathway to peace. And 10 years ago, I couldn't have even dreamed of that. And now I get it. I really do get it. Because it's just.
It's probably hard for some people to see how you can be grateful in a moment of that, but that has been something that I have found is even in the hardest times, if I can say, okay, God, thank you for whatever you're doing right now, good can come out of it. Some way, somehow, sometime, good can come out of it.
It can. So, if there's somebody watching this right now, or in days and weeks to come, and they're watching this on, or listening to it on Spotify or wherever, and they don't know where to start, and they think that they're alone, they think that they're the only person in the world that's going through this. What are your words to them?
I see you. I feel you. I was you. Like, I get it. I know exactly how you're feeling right now. And you get to be brave. You get to be courageous and you get to get help. And, there's lots of free international support opportunities for people. Like, RAIN is one of them, RAINN. And as I mentioned earlier, I do have on my website a resources section and a get help section. And those are anonymous places for people to be able to share their stories. So I would say, excuse me, the first thing is, and if you feel like you can't see yourself saying the words to somebody, write it down, journal it. Start to get it out. Say it to yourself in the mirror. Scream it in a pillow. But you get to start saying it out loud and find somebody that you can trust. And if, like I said, if you're somebody that's doesn't have a lot of availability for resources, there are these anonymous resources that you can reach out to just have a conversation with somebody.
Brilliant. So, do you give us your website again,
So
and your book and things like that?
my name online is just Jill. You can see it on the screen right now, jilleschultz.com without the period. Jilleschultz.com is my web address, and there's all sorts of information on there. There's other I do a Jill's playlist. I try and keep things light, and I want my personality to come through. So I have a playlist of music that I love, and I have my YouTube on there, my Instagram, my fa all of my social media is on there. But the resource tab at the top, there's a get help button there that you can click on. And then my book is also on there. So if you wanted to buy the book, I would love for you to do that. The book is not an easy book to read. So if you pick it up and you get into one chapter and it's very triggering for you, put the book down or go to another chapter. The chapters are not based on each other. It's not, it doesn't go that way. It's kind of like a chicken soup for the soul with different authors. And then I like to think that last chapters are more uplifting and people who have overcome and are living beautiful lives now because of the work that they've done to get there. So.
Brilliant. I shall endeavor to link the website and the books to this when it goes onto the other platforms. I just want to say thank you for coming on and giving me your time
No, thank you.
and having this conversation. I know it's not always easy and we're not always in the mood for it, but sometimes that God leads us into conversations like this because he needs to turn our hearts tender again and he needs to touch other people's hearts. So I get that, which is another reason I love doing this live. Guys, for those that have watched, thank you as always. And yeah, I shall see you again. Hopefully next week, with another podcast. And until then, as always, I tip my hat and I shall love you and leave you. Cheers, guys. I'll speak to you soon.